Right now it's time for the Golf Business and Law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And, of course, I am not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. But joining us, as he always does, is the sports professor Rick Haro, who is the visiting expert on sports law at Harvard. You can see him each week on both CNN and ESPN. You can also find Rick's weekly blog and podcast at msn.foxsports.com. And, of course, you can listen to the sports professor each week in this very time slot, right here with us. Good morning, Rick.
This very time slot. Good morning. Where's Rooney?
He is. He's taking a break. He's got to get ready for the Palm Beach County Golf Association four ball second round of the 2-day event going on today at Ibis. So he's in the hallway right now practicing putting. He'll be back with me in the second hour of the show. But like I said, Rick, unfortunately, Pat, when he's getting into game mode, when he's got his game face on, he doesn't want to deal with you because he knows that you're going to raise his blood pressure. So
well, I was just going to ask him. Make sure that you know when he's in the hall, when you see him, just tell him to. Make sure he doesn't focus on that little jab, you know, front and back putting style that caused him to miss about 70% of his putts. So,
man, you're always taking shots.
Yeah, no. But I'm in New York, and that's the way people do things here. So,
well, before we get to our, we got a slew of topics today. Carolyn Bivens and the LPGA Tour. She's kind of backtracking this week. Also, the NFL opening weekend and the finals of the U.S. Tennis Open. Of course, you're in New York for that. NASCAR's opening weekend. Before we get to all that, how about my Florida Gators yesterday squeaking by the Hurricanes? I was impressed with Miami and Robert Marv, and Pat and I talked about in the opening segment. Next year's game, the 09 meeting between these two teams down in Miami at Dolphin Stadium, a Canes team that'll be a year older, that is going to be one hell of a matchup.
It's finally good to be a Miami sports fan again because I assume both football teams are going to have the snot beat out of them on a regular basis, although I hope that's not true. But at least we're looking up, right? At least you got young guys going in the right direction. I guess the Dolphins have to prove themselves in about 2.5 hours, or whatever. And I think the Hurricanes did a really good job. And congratulations, by the way, for turning the Golf Business and Law segment into a testament to the Gators. But I knew you would do that.
Whenever I get a chance to slide in any reference to the Florida Gators, you know I do that. All right, let's start with the LPGA Tour and Carolyn Bivens, who 1 week after they announced their new English-speaking policy, of course, the LPGA Tour last week announcing that they, starting in 2009, would be testing their foreign player members for English competency, and any players that failed that oral examination would face suspension. Well, 1 week later, after they were in some hot water from all angles, LPGA Tour pro Lorena Ochoa, the number one player in the world, calling the new policy drastic. State Farm, one of their largest sponsors, saying that before they re-up their contract next year, they would have to visit this new language policy and you know the merits of it before they decided to sign on for another long-term extension with the LPGA Tour. And then state senators from all around the country questioning whether this new policy violates federal laws for workplace discrimination and disabilities. Well, 1 week later, after Carolyn Bivens heard everyone from all corners of the contiguous 48 taking shots at the new policy, she has decided to backtrack and announced a couple of days ago the LPGA will revisit this policy, will make changes and alterations, and will announce in a couple of weeks the newly revised policy. Rick, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, my sense is, and we did it last week, that the policy was probably better than people have given it credit for, and this reaction may have been an overreaction to some of the overreactions on the other side. Maybe that's kind of like it is always when you do something that sounds to be pretty drastic. Remember, I think we came away from last week understanding that this is a strong signal to corporate sponsors and to the media to say that the LPGA wanted to be responsive to their demands, and they weren't planning on kicking anybody out. They were planning to create a strong deterrent to make sure that the players took this seriously. And, as we said, they had a year and a half to figure out what to do with it. But because State Farm and basically sponsors and some of the players said, this is too much, who knows what the reaction is going to be. But frankly, still, with a year and a half to get people to take advantage of the Rosetta and some of the other courses that the LPGA makes available to them, again, I'm not sure that the change is going to be that significant because in a perfect world, we're all on the same page. The agents, the players, the sponsors, the pro-am partners all want these athletes to communicate. It's in their interest to communicate. If the LPGA says in the next year and a half, we're going to make it easier for you to communicate. Well, that should be the bottom line of all this, not that they're going to be fired from the workplace. So I think it's a little bit of much ado about nothing, and I guess everybody's now waiting for the reaction 2 weeks from now.
How two-part question here, Rick. How weak unassuming does Carolyn Bivens look with this backtracking? I mean, how does this alter how sponsors and tour members view her? And then B, should she and the LPGA have talked to their sponsors and other areas, players included, before they announced the policy?
Well, I think, of course, when you announce anything major, you want to do something like that. That's why the whole off-field policy and the fan behavior policy, rest assured that Roger Goodell spent a lot of time with owners and others communicating that before it became official. And Bud Selig, say what you want about him, he's on the phone with owners every day communicating with them. And so this may have been a lack of communication, as you said. And I'm not sure whether it's right or not, but Carolyn Bivens has looked now like she's indecisive when a week and a half ago I said the bottom line of all this is the LPGA looks like they're doing this for their sponsors, and they still are. And in many ways, that's very unfortunate for the LPGA.
It's got to hurt their message, you know, when they're saying that this is because of their sponsors and this is to help their sponsors, and then one of their biggest sponsors is part of that growing, you know, group of people coming out and pretty much talking against it. Rick Haro, the sports professor, joining us here during our Golf, Business, and Law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And I am not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. Rick, we're all pigskin fans here in America. NFL is king, college football a close second, and the football season is now upon us. College football for 2 weeks now. This is the second weekend of college football, and then today it all began Thursday night with the matchup between defending Super Bowl champion Giants and the Washington Redskins, with the New York Giants getting the win under their belt. But NFL opening weekend is now upon us, and all these slate of games on Sunday, starting at 1 p.m. and going on through this evening, and then Monday Night Football tomorrow. We realize the PGA Tour season typically winds down right around the same time the football season starts up. Apparently golf realizes they can't compete with pigskin.
Who's leading the BMW, by the way? Do we know?
Jim Furyk and the Florida Gator, Camilla Vajagas.
I'm actually kind of kidding, but you know what the point of that is.
Right, people are not watching.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate, but that's the way the season is going, and we'll see what the Tigerless Ryder Cup ratings are going to be as well, given the fact that college football is going to be into its fourth week and the NFL into its second and third. But again, the bottom line is now the big guys start, got to be able to compete with the big guys, and the NFL is king. It's a $7 billion business, and what golf has tried to do with the FedEx Cup is to have more excitement after the PGA Championship than before. And let's remember 2 years ago when this whole concept was announced, everybody said you wouldn't understand it, it's awful, and we said it's going to take a little while to tweak. The NASCAR Chase is now starting, and nobody's saying let's eliminate that, and they continue to tweak it. So I think golf is in the same cycle. The problem is that NASCAR always now has some positive stroke between the end of, let's say, Labor Day and the championship, and there is time for that. I think golf traditionally, as you know, after the majors, has always kind of gone underground, and those are always second-rate tournaments. So how you turn those second-rate tournaments into bigger ones is something we don't have the complete answer for yet, but we're working on it.
Rick, is there any chance for any kind of synergy between the NFL and the PGA Tour? I think back to a couple of years ago when the Super Bowl was here in Miami, and that same, actually, it was just a couple of weeks, they were separated by maybe 2 weeks, the Super Bowl and then the CA Championship at Doral. Perhaps maybe they were separated by more than that, but Ty Votaw and Eddie Carboni, you know, Eddie Carboni, the tournament director for the CA at Doral, and Ty Votaw, the vice president of international affairs for the PGA Tour, were on Radio Row at the Super Bowl doing interviews with all these different radio talk shows, you know, hyping up their one of their premier events, one of the three WGC events during Super Bowl week in the same city where both of those events would take place. And I thought to myself, that's kind of cool, the synergy there. Is there any chance for, you know, situations like that during the year with the NFL and the PGA Tour?
Well, it depends on how you define synergy. I mean, there are a lot more things, as you know, that go on. During Super Bowl last year, the FBR in Phoenix coordinated with the Super Bowl game, which is the way it should be in any warm weather cities around golf tournaments generally, and the commissioners usually like the idea of having some outward signs of cooperation. And the real key is when the doors are locked, do they really want to cooperate as well? There are signs that golf and football are not competitive totally, as well as all the other sports. And one week, what we ought to do is do a segment totally devoted to the four stick and balls plus golf and tennis and NASCAR and figure out who really cooperates with each other and who don't. Everybody does a little bit, but some more than others.
That would definitely be interesting. You are listening to Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic right here on ESPN Radio 760. Russ Evans joined by the sports professor Rick Haro as it's our golf business and law segment sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And Rick, you are in New York and it's been a great weekend. We got a final today. Serena Williams in that final, and we got a men's final tomorrow, pretty much a necessity of the bad weather. Hurricane Hannah kind of wreaking havoc on the mid-Atlantic states and the Northeast, and we'll have to wait another day for Rafael Nadal. I think the Nadal match is still going on today, if I'm not mistaken. Roger Federer won his match against Djokovic, so we got the women's final today. We got a men's final tomorrow. How's the week been for you up there at the tennis, and what do you think?
Most bizarre week, most bizarre day of tennis I've ever seen in all my hundreds of years of watching this stuff. The USTA tried to stay one step ahead of Hannah, started one of the matches at 11, decided to start the second match simultaneously, basically at 12:20. The end of the second set of the first match, they announced to the maybe 18, 20,000 people at the Ash Tennis Stadium that Nadal and Murray would start in 10 minutes over at the other stadium, open seating. So can you imagine 13,000 New Yorkers, a mad dash to the other stadium? It was an incredible thing to see. And so you got great seats right behind Nadal to see it. They didn't finish. They finished 2.5 sets. So their slot is 4 o'clock today. It may only be a half hour. If it's a half hour, CBS has an interesting filler for what would have been a 3-hour final match. Now they got a half hour. Women tonight at 9 after 60 minutes and whatever else is on CBS, and then the men's final at 5 tomorrow. So it's an interesting issue of what happens when the organizers of any event have to juggle television, the rain, storms, fans, and especially the New York media and New York fans.
Well, you know, CBS has got to be rooting for Nadal, so they get another Nadal-Federer final in a Grand Slam. But, you know, how do the four tennis Grand Slams compare with the four golf majors with respect to TV viewership, attendance figures, etc.?
Well, attendance figures for this Open, for example, are going to be over 750,000 fans, which is nearly...
Wow.
All-time records, about $200 million in revenue. That's important for tennis, by the way, because we always complain that we don't have young players. And it is interesting because the tennis side of this, there was a survey that about 8 out of every 10 interviewed say they follow less tennis than they did 25 years ago. Now, Roddick and Fish rejuvenated, obviously Serena in the finals, but to get the Americans, you need the money. To get the money, you need people to come in. So it's a little bit of a vicious cycle. And it's almost like that in golf, right? But it's a different kind of actor. The actor there is Tiger versus no Tiger. There's no discussion about what new young Americans would come on the scene, although I assume that'll come later on. The discussion is, what do you do when Tiger doesn't play? So it's the same kind of dynamic in the peaks and the valleys. It's just the peaks and valleys are caused by different stuff.
750,000 fans attending the U.S. Open, and that's just for reference sake, that's about three times, a little bit more than three times the amount of fans that attended the U.S. Open this year, the Golf U.S. Open at Torrey Pines in California. But we realize the Golf U.S. Open is about a six-day event when you include the practice rounds and stuff like that and the four rounds of competition, and whereas a U.S. Tennis Open is a two-week event. So kind of apples and oranges a little bit, but that's still very impressive. 750,000 people attending the two-week U.S. Tennis Open this last 2 weeks up in New York, including our good buddy, the sports professor Rick Haro. Rick, you alluded to the NASCAR chase beginning after this weekend. And again, Hurricane Hannah wreaking some havoc on that as well. The NASCAR race in Richmond was supposed to be last night. It has been postponed until this afternoon at 1. So we'll find out who those last few drivers are, 10, 11, and 12. And Jeff Gordon, believe it or not, is one of those guys on the bubble. He's currently inside, hoping that he won't get bounced outside the top 12, and the chase begins next week. But how does that NASCAR point system, which kind of it's been going on for a good 3 or 4 or 5 years now, how does that compare to the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup point system that's now in its second year of existence?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. We alluded to a little bit before, but I've heard on good authority that the NASCAR officials have been told to call a few more free throws on people that are near Jeff Gordon so he makes sure he gets in the top 10. Oh, that's basketball. Oh, sorry. Well, you know what? It's the same kind of thing. There are a lot of fans who are saying, let's make sure that Jeff Gordon gets in. It's a conspiracy. What about this? What about that? That's what makes racing and all of these other sports great. And they are talking about the Chase as the Magic 10 who make it into the playoffs. And your point is, what's the difference, and is it on the same track? And my comment is, it's exactly on the same track, because now the NASCAR Chase, there's no discussion about whether it's good or not, or whether we should eliminate it, but how do we tweak it to continue to make it better? And so that's what's going to happen, I do believe, with the FedEx Cup. It may not be the FedEx Cup after a while. It may be the X Cup or the CA Cup or some sponsor that wants to take it over. Not saying we know that, but the institution of the playoff will be there, because you got to figure out a way to generate some excitement in the funny season before the real funny season starts, the father, son, and all that stuff. And this is the best process that they've come up with to try to get some interest in golf in September, October, November, December, short of saying put the season away and let's start again in January. Everybody knows it's a second season, and maybe this isn't perfect, but it's better than what we had 2-3 years ago.
The one largest difference that I can glean from the two sports and the way that they do their playoff chase, and this is without getting into the minutia of the numbers and the mathematics and how the exact point system is determined, and we could probably get into that another day and find a lot more differences, but just on its face, you know, you take a look at the NASCAR Chase for the Nextel Cup, it's 10 races, 12 drivers in a 10-race playoff towards the end of the season, whereas in golf, it's a 4-event playoffs, and it starts with 144, but they pare that down each successive event from 144 to 120 to 70 to 30. In NASCAR, the 12 racers are still racing against another 31 cars, because each of those 10 races still has 43 cars in it, although only 12 of the racers are in the chase. That seems a little odd to me.
Well, the odd part of it, obviously, is that 2/3 of the cars can win an individual race, but they can't win the big prize. And so there is a lot of discussion about giving it up for the greater good or not, which is a dynamic that you normally don't see in competitive sports. But the other issue, I guess, there is that in a golf tournament, it doesn't really matter whether you're playing against 30 guys or 60 guys as far as the performance on the course. If you end up with a pairing of race cars after each race, and you come down to the final race with, let's say, 12 cars in it as opposed to 35, it does change the way the race is run, and I guess that's the difference. But look, it's a great conversation, right? Because we keep talking about this as if how to make both of those better, and I think that's good.
He is the sports professor, Rick Haro. He joins us each and every week here on Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, during our Golf Business and Law segment, sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach. And, of course, as I've said before, I'm not a lawyer, just a non-lawyer spokesperson for the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. But Rick Haro is a lawyer. He's also the visiting expert on sports law at Harvard. You can see him each week on both CNN and ESPN. And check out his weekly blog and podcast at msn.foxsports.com. Rick, as always, thank you so much for your time. Have a nice weekend in New York, and we'll see you back in South Florida soon enough.
See you next week, my friend.
There he is, Rick Haro, our good buddy, joining us on the line. It's a Golf Business and Law segment sponsored by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins in West Palm Beach.